What's going on, everyone? It's me, Lone. Welcome to episode 5 of Lone Vault Radio, the video games podcast where I invite my friends, other content creators, and industry colleagues to talk all things games. Today, we don't just have one. We have two incredibly very special guests, both from Bethesda Game Studios, both doing an incredible job working on Fallout 76, John Rush and Bill Lacoste. Guys, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you going?
Great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Course. This is great.
Yeah, hell yeah. I'm very excited to be talking to you. And to be very clear, on the podcast, Lone Vault Radio, you are both our very first like developer side, industry colleague side guests on the show. So I'm very excited to be having you here. So please excuse me if I'm a little bit nervous or stumbling. But what I want to do before we talk about Fallout 76, obviously this episode is going to be completely dedicated to 76. I want to talk about the Ghoul Within update. I want to talk about everything that's come in 76. And also at the end, I want to chat a little bit about the future. But for those that are watching or that are listening to this, and you can listen to this on Spotify and Apple Podcasts now as well, for the benefit of everyone, what do you do at Bethesda? What are your titles and exactly like what does your role or both of your roles involve on a day-to-day basis? John, let's start with you, man.
So I'm John Rush, the creative director on Fallout 76. My primary job really is to kind of help come up with our roadmap, what sort of big features, exciting features that we're going to bring to our players are, and to kind of be the grease on the wheels for the development team, make sure everybody has the information they need, the resources they need to be able to execute on these plans.
Awesome. How about you, Bill?
Yeah, my official title is production director on 76, and as John mentioned, it's everything that John does, except I'm trying to find all those resources to make all of it happen. So I've got my team of producers and, you know, make sure we're syncing up with our artists and our development team, you know, to make sure that we have the plans in place to make sure that we can release on the timeline that John would like to release on and we would like to release on. It's you know, it's a team effort, you know, to make sure that these things come out not only on time, but clean and making sure we are putting ourselves in the best position to have a really good launch for all these updates. So
absolutely. And you speak about all these updates. This is the perfect segue into the first section that I wanted to have a chat with you about. The history of Fallout 76. We've got this very exciting Ghoul Within update coming, and we'll talk about that next. But I kind of want to take a step back and smell the roses a little bit. Fallout 76 has come so bloody far. And as someone that was involved on the creator side and also working at Bethesda as a community manager, all those years ago, the game is, when did it launch? The 14th of the November, 2018, which is almost 7 years ago. It's actually crazy that we're still sitting here talking about the game, talking about updates coming. Correct me if I'm wrong. There's been 21 major content updates from Wastelanders to Steel Dawn, Steel Rain, Night of the Moth, Expeditions, whether it's the Pit or Atlantic City, Skyline Valley as well, the Gleaming Depths raids that just came out. Talk to me about the journey the game has been on. And in particular, do you have any favorite memories or moments that you'd like to talk about? Just speak to me about your feelings on how far the game has come.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of view each major update of our game as kind of the next chapter in the story of our Appalachia, right? So
yeah.
The game started way back and you leave the vault and you're left with just this barren wasteland, and there's just a bunch of robots around, and you're familiarizing yourself with the environment, with the characters that used to live there that are still kind of there, but in the form of like holotapes or notes left behind, or even, you know, more morbidly, some of their bodily remains. So you're building a familiarity with the history of the region, the people that used to live there, you're interacting with the robots, right? And then people start to get some interest and want to move into this area, and you come upon, you know, Wastelanders, and you get the settlers moving in, the raiders moving in. They start to kind of stake their claim in our wasteland on their own, sort of the next big chapter in the story. The Brotherhood of Steel, who want to come in and appropriate some technology for themselves, those crazy Brotherhood of Steel folks.
They're best.
So helpful.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Brotherhood of Steel, more like it, right? Stealing? Anyways, bad joke.
It's not. And no, so absolutely
it's,
not.
It's, you know, it's kind of like evolving chapters of the story. Skyline Valley, big region expansion. The map mutates. You're exposed to a whole new part of Appalachia, the Shenandoah Forest. New stories, new characters, new places to explore, new places to build. So really, this whole time that we've been live, it's just been sort of just one part of our story at a time, kind of slowly getting that to players, letting them experience it and letting them make their own stories.
Honestly, the way that you explained it like that is awesome. Like, it's this is not just updates for updates' sake. You are building the story. It is how everything started initially, where there was no one in the Wasteland. Then the Wastelanders came in. And then the Brotherhood of Steel, of course, like they like to do, they like to stake their claim. You have developed this progressing awesome story with every single update that you've done.
Yes. And you know, it's so elegant and simple where the game started. There's nobody there. It's just you. Yeah. Go and explore. And you're meeting people and people move. It's just a nice cadence and a nice build up to where we are now, where the map's growing and more people are coming and there's more fighting and more things to loot. Honestly, one of my favorite memories, I have a lot of favorite memories in the game, but I think one of my favorite was seeing the excitement that people had when the map changed, a whole new region with new creatures and new things to do and new factions to learn about, seeing people's excitement in the game, seeing people's excitement on socials. I think that's probably one of my favorite memories in 76 to date.
How about you, Bill?
Yeah, I mean, it is very surreal to think about, because it only does seem like yesterday that we were sitting in rooms, you know, triaging 2,000-3,000 Wastelanders bugs, you know, trying to make sure we were trying to get this thing out the door, you know, as clean as possible. And honestly, that was one of my favorite moments for this game, was launching Wastelanders and the team that was involved with it, because like John said, it brought a new element of players and NPCs and quests and just different systems into the game at that period of time when it actually needed it. It was such a big update and really kind of set the table for the stage for everything we're doing today to jump into where we are now. And I want to say too that, you know, there was not really any kind of like wavering confidence, you know, in the team either, because it's like, yeah, we all realize where we started from and when Wastelanders came out, what kind of things we added to the game, but then we just knew all along, because we had this amazing roadmap, we had a very active player base, genuine energy amongst the team to try to improve the game and make it better and put out all this new content. And so, you know, as John can tell you, we think 2, 3, 4 years ahead of time, you know, and so seeing that roadmap and understanding that's where we were going and looking that far into the future, you know, we were super excited about what we could bring to players, especially in terms of just new content, but also quality of life changes. You know, that's something we've been really good about. And some of the QOL updates are actually some of my favorite moments as well. And those just add a lot to the existing systems and to the everyday things that players engage in. So.
The QOL updates, especially when I return, we were all speaking off camera before we started recording. I recently got back into the game. By far, one of my most favorite things is legendary crafting. Like, to be able to, I see a gun that maybe doesn't have the best first star, but the second and third are really bloody good. The fact that I can simply change that first star now, to me, boggles my mind, because I remember how we were all gunning for those gold rolls and hoping that we'd get really lucky with RNG. But now you guys were like, no, you know what? We're going to make this as easy as possible for you. There is still an element of needing to get these box mods, whether you're crafting, you're scrapping them to learn the actual plans, whether you're getting them from raids, whatever it might be. There is still that element. But it's so much easier now, and it brings a whole level of joy for me playing the game again, especially seeing how far it has come over the years. You mentioned this being surreal. Did you ever expect, almost 7 years after the game launched, to be sitting here like continuing to work on the game and speak about the game?
Yes and no. You know, it's hard to say, especially when you're looking at numbers, you see players. But again, you go back to looking at the engagement that our community has with this game and the number of players who were still engaging, even to some of those more maybe like challenging times for us, you know, putting content out. So when you see that and you look at it, it's like, yeah, I'm not surprised that we are here, because they know where we're going. And I think what was important for us was to just show the players that, look, we are consistently putting out content. But the consistency part was the big thing there, meaning every 12 weeks you are going to get an update to this game that has meaningful content, story, quests, you know, systems updates, you know, things like that. So we knew that if we just kept on doing that, that players would remain, they would stay, they would be engaged. And yeah. as you know, Discord, Reddit, they're always willing to give us feedback on the things that they Hell want yeah. us to look at. You know, we have star boards, we have the suggestion boards of Discord, and we also have the PTS side of Discord as well, that people are happily to engage and let us know how things are playing out. So, you know, us rolling out those types of features, and again, just staying consistent with the players and engaging with the players, we knew we would be at this point in the future.
Even the PTS is proof of that, Bill. Like when the PTS was introduced, giving us an opportunity, not just, don't get me wrong, it's cool just to be able to play upcoming content early as a fan, but also when you think right. about it from the development perspective, that gives us an opportunity to provide direct feedback on things at that stage. And there are countless times, and I've lost count, as to how many things and mechanics and systems and numbers have been tweaked from PTS to the moment something has actually come out to the live server. I used to follow that stuff, and now I follow that stuff really closely. You need to be commended on that side, and not to give yourselves a pat on the back, but you should. Like, the PTS was an absolute game changer, and you're still doing them with every major update to this day.
Yeah, it's huge for us. Like I said, the feedback we get from that, you know, day one through day 30, you know, is good. And we see that. And you know, to give people maybe just a little bit of insight into our process internally, we have a full team of people who come in after PTS launches, and we do live triages. We have triages that show all the issues that are coming in. We have feedback. We have it broken down by each individual feature that's gone out. And we talk about these things, and we talk about the impact to players and what's the priority on certain things here. And so that just kind of gives people insight that we are constantly looking at this and trying to make sure that what we're delivering to players is an improvement every time we put up a new build.
And is that something that you would similarly do when you actually have an update going into the live server, that triage process? So you're pretty much treating the PTS in a kind of similar way.
Very similar, because, you know, before, and I don't want to get too much into our production processes, but, you know, usually when we go to PTS, we're at a point where we're already content complete. Like, we are ready to receive feedback, not only from internal playtests, but external players on PTS. So we've already completed the work at this point, and we're just waiting to see what kind of tuning we need to do, what kind of iterations we need to do. Sometimes it's like, hey, you know what? That doesn't look that great in this particular setting. Let's change that up. Let's change the lighting. Let's change shadows. You know, it's like there's a lot of different things we find out through that testing. But yeah, certainly at that point in time, we're done. Like, we are ready to release technically to the public, and that's what we're doing with PTS. And so we just get that in the wild type of feedback from players. And our players are smart. I mean, they know more about this game sometimes than we do. And it's like, oh, really? I didn't know that. And we still know a lot about the game, right? And they've been, you know, and they've been playing this for forever, you know, and they're huge Fallout fans. And so it's just a welcome sight to really see all the feedback that they give us and the engagement that they have with us. I can't say enough about how happy I am to have a community like that and for us to have that community. So.
Yeah, and obviously you've had a PTS. I'm not too sure if it's still live, but you've had a PTS for this Ghoul update, officially called Ghoul Within. I would love to now shift to that and speak about this update, because it's probably one of the most exciting updates next to Skyline Valley that has come to the game, or that will be coming to the game. March 18 is the official date, US time. Talk to me about the Ghoul Within. Talk to me about being able, not just in Fallout 76, but across the entirety of the Fallout franchise, this is going to be the first time that we get to play as a ghoul. In and of itself, that is cool, right? I kind of want to know, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the mechanics and how it actually works, talk to me about how long have you been tossing this up, this idea of us being able to play as a different character, a different type of character in the game, and then how eventually you got to deciding on the ghoul. How long have you been thinking about it before really getting into proper development?
So we had talked about, you know, the ability for a player to transform their character into a ghoul for a while. And I think where that kept getting hung up was we wanted it to be like a really meaningful experience, not just an appearance change.
For
sure. We wanted it to have, you know, mechanical, have really deep mechanical meaning to the game. So the trick was really to kind of continue to evolve the game and continue telling the next chapter of the story and so on until the need sort of came out, right? And so as we started to talk about more in-game experiences or in-game features like legendary crafting or four-star legendaries or raids, which are very much in-game experiences, the idea of offering players like an alternate route to explore those in-game experiences became kind of more and more tantalizing. And so, okay, well, what if we did that with players being able to transform their character, their existing character, into a ghoul? Remember, the sole requirement for that is that you're level 50. Level 50 in our game is, it's like kind of where the in-game content starts. You're fighting Scorch Beast Queens, you're fighting Storm Goliaths, you know, you're ready for that next thing or other ways to progress through those things.
Yeah.
So that seemed to make the most sense. So what does it mean for somebody to be a ghoul? What sort of benefit do they have? What sort of detriment is there to being a ghoul? All in-game focused, right? All 30 of the new ghoul perk cards, two of which are legendary, are aimed at those end-game experiences and different ways to experience those. So that's really where that came from. We had floated the idea for a while, but really didn't have a good reason to do it until we started to talk about that really high-level content.
So you mentioned the perk cards. I really want to get just to how this all works. Talk to me about how being a ghoul is actually like. What's the process of becoming a ghoul? What's the deal with the feral meter? What's the deal with glows? Some of the new perk cards. I would really like to get in just for people that may not be aware and maybe they're looking to dip their toes back into the Fallout 76 waters for the first time. How does the update and being a playable ghoul actually work?
So again, the sole requirement to transform your character into a ghoul is that you're at least level 50. If you're at least level 50, you have the option to transform into a ghoul. Look, you're level 50. You've been running around our Appalachian wasteland for a while. All of our wasteland wanderer maniacs have been dropping nukes left and right. So of course there's going to be radiation, you know, floating around, and, you know, turning into a ghoul might make some sense. So the actual process of turning into a ghoul, it's very mysterious, and I don't want to get too deep into the science of it. However, in the game, lucky for you, we've placed a radiation specialist that can help you along with that process, again, as long as you're level 50. So the radiation specialist, once you meet them, they'll have the instructions. You just follow the instructions and should have no problem transitioning into the ghoul. So how's the ghoul different from being a normal player? Well, as a normal player, I want to stay away from radiation, right? Radiation hurts me. As a ghoul, I actually benefit from radiation. I can heal from radiation. And if I'm fully healed from radiation, drinking dirty water, or eating radioactive mud, or standing next to radioactive barrels or whatever, if I'm fully healed from that, I start to actually build up radiation in reserve. Through a power we're calling glow. Glow builds up over time, and as a ghoul, you can harness glow. You can use glow in tandem with some of your new abilities that you can explore through the new perk cards, which use a lot of that glow or have benefits to players that have glow. In addition to that, ghouls also are not subject to hunger and thirst. I'm a ghoul. I don't care about hunger and thirst. All I care about are Kims. Give me Kims. And so you need to ingest lots of Kims, right? Because when you're a ghoul, if you're not ingesting Kims, you've got a feral meter that's slowly depleting. What do you think happens when that feral meter runs out? You turn feral. But if you don't want to turn feral, eat those Kims, and that'll keep that meter nice and full. There are also perk cards that help facilitate that too. So those are kind of the basic dynamics of playing a ghoul. You know, as a ghoul, you're not going to really want to be in power armor, right? Because a lot of people wear power armor to sort of stave off radiation. As a ghoul, I don't want that. I want that radiation. And so just how they respond to radiation alone opens up a whole, you know, a whole host of different play styles just with that alone. You take the new ghoul perk cards and layer those on top along with the feral meter and turning feral or not being feral. Dozens of new play styles, dozens of new play styles that we could think of, and I'm sure dozens more that our clever community is going to come up with as they test this. Maybe some we're going to have to patch out. You never know, probably. But that's kind of the core essence of what it is to be a ghoul. Some factions aren't going to like you. You know, those Brotherhood of Steel, once again, you know, you come across them as a ghoul, you're going to have some problems. Granted, we have a disguise specialist that can help you out with that, named Jay. Talk to Jay, and Jay can help you get disguised, and you're able to interface with these Brotherhood, and they don't know the difference. So lots of cool new mechanics at play here, and I really can't wait for players to get in and explore those for themselves. A lot of possibilities, and a lot of ways this ties into future content as well. All of which I will not be discussing.
I won't probe. It's intriguing me, but I promise you, I won't probe it in this.
A pattern, it's these updates have been building upon one another and building and building, and they're going to continue to do so.
It's taking me all my restraint not to ask more questions about that, John. Can I ask you? The feral meter and the glow system is what's really intriguing me. What happens when you turn completely feral? I understand that there are obviously some negatives with that, but there are some positives. What are the big impacts there?
You want to take that one, Bill, or you want me to run with it?
Yeah, so, you know, very similar to the old health and thirst or food and thirst meters, there were thresholds. Yeah. It was a subtractive system, right? And so this kind of follows that same premise. So you could be, you know, full on, you know, nothing in your feral meter, and it's going to drain kind of the same rate as normal health and food would. And then as you get below those thresholds, you're going to start getting hit with some bonuses, but also detractive elements as well. So once you kind of get below that 60-40 threshold that's there, you start to lose a good bit of endurance, max HP, max AP. However, you start to gain melee damage, you also eventually lose a ton of endurance, but also charisma, I think, is on that list too, HP, AP, and your gun accuracy goes low. So basically, once you get down to completely feral, you're just a melee machine at that point. And I think that's going to be the interesting part, because that's how I play. I'm completely forgetting about all the chems and stuff right now to manage the feral meter, right?
Bill is a maniac.
I love it. And also just for the art, you know, just for the element of fun, you know, I have cannibal on there, so I, you know, will kill things and then eat them, and you know, just for to give it the full feral effect,
of
right?
Course.
Yeah, as one would as a feral pool, right?
Yeah.
And kind of going back to your original question too, I think all of us, including fans and everybody, have always secretly wanted to play as a ghoul in these games, you know, but it wasn't really until kind of like last year that we kind of put pen to paper, as they say, you know, to this idea. But we've always wanted to kind of do this. And as John said, also, you know, we talked about this even in the previous interviews. We didn't want to cheap out on the experience. We didn't want to give players something that was simply just a mask disguise. We really wanted to build a new system around this, because we wanted to give players another way to play this game. And I think that's what it's going to provide players. And I'm very, very excited about it. You know, John, and you mentioned some of the perks. We have things in there like faulty spots, for example. So weak point damage is increased by 15%. You know, we have brick wall. So when your glow is high, you're immune to stagger, which is awesome, because I love that part of it.
And what?
Yeah. So we have a lot of great perks, you know, in the game right now. And like John said, we'll probably continue to tune some of these. We'll find out some of maybe a little OP, but we'll let players tell us that. You know, we'll take a look at the data and things and just continue to iterate as we see fit. But a lot of these perks we're putting in are pretty cool. They do a lot of benefits.
That anti-stagger one sounds awesome. That's
yeah, they have great. A lot of benefits to those players who are going to be running as a ghoul. So and honestly, I don't know how other players are going to play, but I'm going to roll a brand new character as the ghoul and play that way. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm excited for it. I'm excited to join in on events. I'm excited to do Rad Rumble, of course, because I'll just run around to my heart's content, you know, in that area. So that'll be great. Excited to see and jump in and see the thousands of, you know, hundreds of thousands of players at this point, like coming in and joining and playing is cool. So should be a lot of fun. Really excited.
Touching on things potentially being OP and you needing to work on that and balance that. And I'm sure that happened during the PTS. I've been speaking to some creators, namely Angry Turtle, who he tells me that if you, in terms of endgame content, in particular in terms of raids, Ghoul is going to be very powerful, possibly the most powerful way of playing the game. Can you confirm or deny that? Is that the case?
I don't want to say it could be either. I also believe that within our game, there's still a lot of skill involved with making this work.
100%.
You know, there are loadouts that you would not think are great or min-maxed in some way, shape, or form to help you play. And then you put it on, you're like, oh my God, this is great. And a lot of those are done by the community because they experiment. They do a lot of theory crafting on everything we do. They try every card, every rank. They spreadsheet it and output data and parse it. And it's fun to watch them do that too, by the way. I enjoy that element of it. So,
yeah. Can I ask you, does that ever help you? Because you're crunching the numbers on your side. You're seeing the actual telemetry and data on what players are doing, what weapons and whatever is being used more. So that's probably the strongest or whatever it might be. Do you ever look at a video like from the likes of Angry Turtle or other creators, Mr. West Tape, where they're breaking down these big spreadsheets and numbers and you're like, huh, we probably need to have a look at that, or that's something that we didn't know. Does that happen all the time or from time to time?
Yeah, I mean, we take a look at those videos, but sometimes they're already posting it in Discord while they're on PTS. They'll actually give us that feedback that, hey, I think this is broken, or I think this is feeling a little bit OP with my current setup. And then we'll actually take a look at it, run through and go, yeah, that's actually a really good way to synergize, all these things together. And it does a lot of damage. So, but also at the same time, players with our game really, truly enjoy the power fantasy. They love going in and just laying waste to tons of scorched or ghouls and things like that. So there's a healthy balance I think we have to strike there, because we don't want to take that away from players. That we feel that that's a really key part of the experience that players have in our game. And so we want to make sure that that is fun, enjoyable, and still provides a level of engagement and fun that they're looking for.
At the end of the day, like 76 is a game and we're playing it because it's fun. I'm sure at times it's hard to strike that balance between being super, super lore accurate and like, this is Wasteland and da 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 da, to actually like, no, we actually want a fun game, and the game cannot remain stagnant and stale. Otherwise, players naturally move on as what happens. You need to keep adding fun stuff and crazy stuff to be able to keep people interested in coming back to the game constantly. And in my position, being able to play as a ghoul, and you've touched on this, it sounds like this is going to be a completely or very different style and way of playing Fallout 76. So in terms of lapsed players, is that your pitch to them? Like, hey, maybe you should come back because this is actually going to fundamentally change up how you could or should even play Fallout 76.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the advantages that 76 has, or one of the main differences I'd say it has from the other Fallout titles and even from the show, is that we're the furthest back in history, like by far. We're the furthest back. So we've got, it's like, yes, we're going to come up with features and additions to the story that are totally in sync with Fallout, but we have a lot more room to explore what those are without being so, tied into very recent lore. For example, in Gleaming Depths, those of you that have played Fallout 2 and are familiar with Frank Horrigan, you know who Frank Horrigan is? Well, I mean, there's a few, there's three Frank Horrigan references in that raid. All wearing the similar power armor, perhaps that was a prototype. I don't know, but there's a lot of that kind of creative freedom where we can explore some existing lore, and there's a creative freedom where we get to kind of make our own. So that's kind of where, having your character turn into a ghoul comes in. It's like, well, what's unique here? Why can we do that in 76? And how does that feel? Players think ghouls are cool. I mean, it's no coincidence that the star in the Amazon series is a ghoul.
Absolutely.
Because people love ghouls, and I suspect a lot of people are going to want to come back just to see what that experience is. Or a lot of people that are already here are going to want to make a new character to see what that experience is, or perhaps fully commit to it with their existing character and just live the ghoul life.
So let's say someone is playing as a ghoul. They're having a blast. They're completing the season. And I want to touch on season 20 in just a second. Hypothetically, let's say they want to stop being a ghoul. What is that process? And is there a way that people can continually, swap back and forth between being a ghoul and a non-ghoul? How does that work?
So if you have taken your human character and turned into a ghoul, tried ghoul for a bit, and you've decided, this isn't really for me, there is a way in the game that does not conflict with lore that you can literally unghoul your character. It's as simple as unchecking a box. Not a ghoul anymore. Yeah. So you're back to human. You're back to how you looked before.
Yeah.
No problem. If you have second thoughts about that and want to turn back to a ghoul, it's not free. It'll cost you. You have to buy a pass to do that.
Yeah. So that is going to be tied through the Atomic Shop, that ability to constantly change back and forth. The first one and the first reversion is free, but then after that, it's through the Atomic Shop.
Correct.
And on the Atomic Shop, on season 20, as I was mentioning before, you recently came out and announced a bunch of stuff. Naturally, all the rewards are very glowy, mutated, ghouly. Talk to me. It sounds like you had a lot of fun coming up with those rewards, and I'm sure you do every season. Was this one in particular a lot of fun? I've seen a lot of the rewards. They're visually so distinct from a lot of the other stuff that we've seen before, and you're naturally wanting to people to play as a ghoul, but also build a very ghoul-specific camp. Talk to me about season 20. Talk to me about the rewards and just the process in coming up with those ideas.
Well, we've got a great seasons team who came up with so many ideas for these rewards. It was honestly the hardest part was going through it with them and being like, oh, no, or we don't have time, or you know. And so, but I think where it ended up, it's a really solid offering for this patch, very thematic and a lot of fun things. Bill, what would you say is your favorite item in the season?
Come on, Bill.
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know.
I know that these questions can be difficult because you don't want to say one thing, and because everything is cool.
Yeah, I don't think I have one, John.
No.
I think what, at least for me, especially when we're doing camp items and things that are across the season that you put in your camp, I usually have to place them down, like especially if they're in the right shelter and in the right zone as well. And then all of a sudden you kind of see the upside to it. So I'm definitely going to be trying to build places that are more radiated in some cases and places that are good, and then plop those things down and go, okay, that works with this environment. So I can't tell you if I have a favorite, in the season so far.
Do you have one, John?
I like the goo tub. I like the glowing goo tub.
Wait, is that the one where the skeleton's in the tub and it's... That was going to be my pick.
It's a hot tub full of goo. I could hang out in there for a while. Sure.
Well, I mean, as a ghoul, you can swim in the stuff now. Like that's
sure,
the point.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
Cool, I can drink it.
Genuinely, like I'm very looking for, I'm looking forward to going through the season and being able to pick up those items. Can I ask on a bit of a tangent, especially when we're talking about lapsed players, I have noticed that every now and again through the Atomic Shop that you're bringing back previous season rewards and allowing players that maybe missed out on that opportunity to have a second go at it. Is that something that you're continually planning to do for 76 moving forward to ensure people that maybe haven't played the game in a while and haven't completed particular seasons, they have a chance to get those rewards again? Complete tangent, but I'm genuinely interested on that.
I think players like the chance to be able to go back and get those. So we have lots of discussions about that and some alternate future plans as well. I mean, I wouldn't really want to talk about them here, but they're all hinged around making sure that players have the ability to get these things that they may have missed out on. Just different ways to do it.
Awesome. By the way, did you end up revealing a new Power Armor skin for this season? I'm not too sure if I see it. Is there one, or are you going to keep it close to your chest? I really want one.
A new Power Armor skin for the
power
season?
Power Armor skin. Is there a brand new standout one that's coming along with this season?
I think we usually put them in. I can't really say, to be honest. I guess we'll have to get the patch and find out for ourselves.
I was interested because, as a ghoul, you said that you're not necessarily wanting to jump in power armor because you wanted to expose yourself to radiation as much as possible. As a hypothetical, let's say I was a ghoul. Is there a benefit, even with that negative, is there other benefits for me being in power armor? Is that still viable? What do you reckon?
Technically, it's still viable for you because there's going to be set bonuses across some of the other power armors, like Union power armor. You're still going to get the weight increase, so there's definitely going to be those inherent bonuses to the sets that you have. But in terms of the radiation protection, you kind of don't want it because it's just going to stop you from going into glow. Or when you expend all of your glow, you're not going to be able to get it back up. So So I'm not expecting players to really truly run around in power armor. And also it just kind of gets rid of the look of the ghoul too.
You're right. I mean, the thing is, in power armor, you can remove your helmet,
you might
right?
see perhaps you might see a bunch of ghouls running around in power armor without the helmet. Yeah, miner's helmet on instead.
You know, you touched on like players testing things and coming up with crazy ideas that you didn't think of. I can almost see it now of a bunch of ghouls running around with power armor on with the helmet removed. They've figured out this awesome meta and the perks pair together really nicely. Can I ask, like, have there been any memories or moments where that's kind of happened, where you were genuinely shocked? Like, how did they think of that? We didn't even come across that. It's the nature of game development where players test something in a certain way and it's kind of crazy. Do you have any like memories or moments where you can really think of that happening? I'm sure there's a few.
I don't know if I should say this one. It's a
don't be pressured. Yeah. All right? You can say no, Lone. Stop asking.
Well, let me just say this. I did see a video the other day of someone power armor shifting through the world and making their way down to the Ultra Sight Terror. And I think got outside the world. Yeah. So I was like,
yeah,
all right. That was, you know, applause for the creativity and the work, but don't do that. You're just killing the hood, man. Go through it all. It's good. So
no, some of the best raids that I've had. I'm playing it normally, just with a bunch of people. What I'm really interested in is being able to go through a raid and doing that endgame content as a ghoul. I'm curious if you've tested out doing that, and do you have a preferred way of going through a raid? Is it as a normal character? Is it in power armor? Is it as a ghoul? What do you reckon?
Oh, sorry, John.
Go ahead, Bill.
I was going to say, as a ghoul and also playing feral, it's kind of the equivalent of trying to run those in like a bloodied type of situation.
Sure.
It doesn't usually work out well for me, especially doing melee, because you definitely need ranged elements down there in the raid. So it's probably not going to work out too much for people if you're planning to just go feral down into the raid. But I have other loadouts too that I run through there, and I just have to be more careful. You know, not necessarily so much around the toxic pools and things like that, but certainly I'm a little bit more squishy. You know, running through those now, so I do have to be a little more careful.
Sure.
But it's still a lot of fun, and it's obviously still doable too, so which is important.
Out of curiosity, by the way, if you are a ghoul, does that change your resistance to poison for like the Ultra Sight Terror, for instance, or is that the same no matter if you're a ghoul or non-ghoul?
No, just radiation. Yeah.
Fair. Yeah, that's cool. Well, I'm personally very excited to come back and play as a ghoul. It's something that I've personally been preparing for. We have like 20 minutes or so now as part of this episode. I would really like to start chatting about the future of Fallout 76. And as I mentioned to you, you can be as nondescript as you want. You can tell me, stop asking questions. We want to save stuff to reveal later. But I'd be remiss of not asking at least some of these questions. Talk to me about the future of Fallout 76, just generally. I know that we've got things that you've teased, like the fishing update, and I'd love to ask you about that. But what's the general direction that you want to take this game moving forward?
So, like I said at the beginning of the interview, right, we want to continue telling the story of our Appalachia's developers, and our Appalachia for our community members, right? We all share the space. And what we see players enjoy the most are these types of story updates where it gives us more room to tell our story, and it gives them more room and more agency to tell their own. They tell their own stories through grouping up with their friends and exploring and building, and we get to tell our own story by, you know, introducing new factions and new quest lines and new bosses that you have to fight. And so I think Skyline Valley was a really good example of that. And then it really kind of checked off all those boxes. It gave everybody those unique opportunities, both at the time of update and for future updates too, if some of those territories might change a bit. So I would say, you know, updates like that are very much in 76's future. The ones where both sides get to tell their own stories, I think, have been the most successful updates as far as sentiments and kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Sentiment and kind of appreciation or excitement across the board.
For sure. map expansions, by the way, like Skyline Valley was something that I've very much enjoyed. I know a lot of other people did, not just for the story aspect, not just for the events that were introduced, but the fact that we saw this spot on the map that previously was inaccessible and that we could go explore it now, that's just a cool moment. Can I ask you, when, and this is such a long time ago now, over 6 years ago, was that ever the thinking when you were developing the map of Fallout 76? Did you develop it in mind that, oh, maybe one day we could go beyond and explore this area? Because there are so many areas on the map where you're able to take that look and think, actually, that just kind of looks cool. Was it more of a, nah, this, we just want some nice background set dressing? Or did you have that in mind at the time?
Well, I mean, it makes nice background set dressing, doesn't
it? Does.
It? But it also, but also as a player, when you're looking out at that vast unexplored territory, your imagination starts to go, right?
Absolutely.
And so really, I think that was the purpose of it, in kind of reserving the space, was that it would sort of kind of tantalize the imaginations of our players. And they would kind of eagerly be awaiting in anticipation of what's to come. So was it done on purpose? Yeah.
You said you have stuff planned 3-4 years
in
advance, so I don't know.
it's done on purpose. You know, I think all of us being Fallout fans and players of the game of the franchise over the years really love that sort of what if, you know, and that's kind of what leaving that expanse of land is. It's a big what if, and so Skyline Valley is a great answer to what if. You know, there are other areas that could be answered. The what ifs could be answered. We'll have to see, but yeah,
for sure.
I think just inherently, we always want to explore. We want to see new things and see new environments and see new creatures. And I think that's what a lot of these expansions provide, you know, for the game. And so players really enjoy those. And like I said, it just kind of speaks to our innate desires to explore and see what else is out there. And we've got a good IP to do that with. We got a lot of potential, a lot of opportunity.
But even like previously expeditions, right? We were able to go back to the pit. We were able to experience that in Fallout 3 DLC. It gave us the opportunity to do that. And I'm not going to probe here, but the IP provides that opportunity of being able to explore those areas. Especially what makes it so fascinating is that it's at a point in time in the Fallout franchise, timeline-wise, that it allows you the flexibility and the freedom to do a lot more. And I'm sure that was going through your head when you were thinking about the pit. I'm sure that was going through your head when you were thinking about Atlantic City, different area. But how do you, like, scope creep is a real thing. How do you stop yourselves and be like, we gotta just start making the bloody game? There's so many cool things that we could do. Does that get difficult at times?
Yeah, it's when you're approaching these big features, you know, I think there's a tendency for, and I'm guilty of this too, everybody wanting to go in and we're gonna do this and this and this and this little thing, and this is gonna happen, this big explosion. You really have to start those with a few big broad strokes. You know, we all take a look at the broad strokes as a group. Oh, okay. Yeah, I like the red one and the blue one. Okay, let's do some smaller strokes along those lines and see how that looks. So you kind of approach it in an iterative state, kind of taking note of what kind of resources it would require, what sort of risks it would incur along the way, and making the best decision that you can along the way, and weighing those decisions against how much time you have to make it. So I think that's the key, is to start simple, right? Like Skyline Valley, start simple. We want to tell the story of Vault 63 and we want a new region. Okay. There's a couple of big broad strokes. Now, what does that look like? Well, this new region is going to have, you know, 20 new points of interest. Okay. Now the strokes are starting to get smaller. What do those point of interest mean? Well, one's a scout's camp. One's a big dam. One, and then, you see what I'm saying? So you approach it really iteratively and you build it up over time so that you don't bite off too much at once and get yourself in trouble. Because you're right. That creep is a real thing. I've been guilty of it too many times.
No, I mean, it's natural. Bill, you're laughing. It's natural part of the development process, but I'm sure Fallout as an IP in particular makes it very hard not to do.
Yeah. And I think... Oh, sorry, go ahead, John.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
And it's tricky too, because we're all such big fans of the game. We all want to put so much of ourselves into it. Well, I had this idea for a thing. Well, I had this idea for They may all be great ideas. Unfortunately, you know, we can't bend the rules of time and space to make them all happen. So we have to kind of just make the best decisions we can at what we think is the most impactful to the update and what supports kind of what the crux of the update is. Sorry, Bill, I jumped in. What were you
saying? No, you actually hit on exactly what I was going to say, is that, you know, we come in every day with an excitement to work on this game and talk about new features and talk about new systems and talk about QOL and talk about, you know, UI, you know, on what we can do to make this game better and more of an experience for players. And that goes a long way. And like John said, we are definitely guilty of doing feature creep sometimes. And going, let's do this and let's do this and that. But we are also pretty good about scaling it back to and going, you know what? We're not living patch to patch, you know, with this particular product. We have the luxury right now because of the support of the fans and also support of the team and the company to continue this effort of putting content into 76, that we don't have to think patch to patch. We think year to year. And as John said, what story are we trying to tell within Appalachia for the players, and think of long term in terms of how do these things build upon each other. And I think for a long time we were just so focused on trying to get content out. And now we've kind of had a little bit of a shift. There's more systems coming into the game now, you know, the ghoul, fishing, like all these different types of systems now, alongside QOL, and some of longstanding systems that are kind of, I wouldn't say outdated. They're just, the other content has surpassed maybe some of that, some of the systemic work. And so we need to update those. We have tech work that we still want to do. So this goes across the whole board in terms of like what our tech team wants to do, what our client team wants to do, what art, design, you know, everybody has ideas of how they want to approach each year with their set of goals. And I think that's what's special about this team in general. They do such an amazing job. And everybody's excited to work on this, you know, coming in every day. And I think it shows in the work too. I think it's very much apparent with our presence, the way we talk about the game in interviews like this. And you can see the genuine excitement that we have when we want to talk about, you know, the product we're working on. And I think that shows.
It absolutely shows. And I think anybody listening or watching this right now, like, they can be a bit at ease, even if there was any doubts that someone may have had about Fallout 76 and its future. It really does sound like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you are very much committed to the game, to continuing to build on it, and to give fans and the community as much stuff as possible moving forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is 100%. Honestly, like, it does put me at ease, but also it gets me very, very excited for the future, especially some of the stuff that you've teased, like fishing. Can I ask a little bit about that? You can shut me down. What's coming with fishing?
So that's only a rumor, by the way.
Come on, John. I saw the rod. I saw the fishing rod in that video. We all did.
That, you know, the dog brought that in. It was bringing in all kinds of stuff from around the studio. I can't account for what that dog was doing off camera. That fishing was a rumor.
We take ideas from everywhere.
Damn. All right. I won't ask about fishing, but I'll also be remiss if I don't ask about this. Ghoul update. Ghoul Within. March 18. It's coming. Have you started thinking, or is there any potential for any other playable character or class? Super mutant, robots, there are many. What do we reckon?
Well, I was kind of thinking that we could give players the option to play as Mirelurks. No. So
how are you going to have conversations?
That's a good question, and we've gotten that question before. And you know, as somebody who's played a lot of MMOs, I understand where it's coming from. Again, it's going back to why we chose to bring Ghoul in now, right? There are those mechanical differences that are going to really make that feature, when weighed against all the updates going on around before and after this Ghoul update, that gives a reason for it to even exist. We don't want it to just be a visual change, right? So if, like, a popular one that's been brought up a lot is, I want to play as a super mutant. That would be neat.
That's the natural step, yeah.
But tell me why. What does it do? You know, and so it's really, we have to think, if we want to do that, we have to think about what meaningful difference that makes mechanically in the game. And I think the obvious one to gravitate to is, oh, it's a Superman. You could be a tank. It's like, sure. I have power armor. I can be a tank.
Sure.
You know? So it I'm not saying no, and I'm not saying yes. It takes a really good reason to push that forward. And I think,
yeah.
And I know players want to hear, I want to play as this is, but trust me, it's having those reasons really so clearly underlined. When you hop in as a ghoul, you're going to feel it, and it's going to feel really awesome. It's going to feel really good. You're going to be glad that it's more than just an appearance change, that there's so much more to it. And so any other races that we bring into the game, we would want players to have that same satisfaction.
For sure. Because, like, let's be honest, if you did just make it an aesthetic choice, like, oh, you can play as a ghoul, but really it's only your looks that are changing and that you can customize, people wouldn't be happy with that, right? So, like, yeah, you're seeing all these great ideas and you want to put them into action and to execute on them, but you also need to do it right. What's hit me the most about this podcast, which, by the way, I've really enjoyed, thank you, is how you really, and it's just clicked for me, you're building this continuous story and you're connecting these major updates in a meaningful way moving forward. And it's something that I didn't appreciate before this. So I'm not going to probe too much more about it, but it really just does sound like the future of 76 is very safe. And obviously, the Fallout franchise is pumping right now. We've got Fallout, the TV show season 2 as well. Can I ask you quickly about that? What was it like with season 1 and the hit that was to have this huge influx of players come to Fallout 76? Was that a bit of a surreal experience?
I would say so. Because even with a TV show that's built around, you know, the product you're working on, there is still some anxiety, right? Like that first episode comes out, you're like, is this going to be good or is this not? You know, and then you know, one or 2 minutes in, you're like, okay, this is a hit. This is amazing.
Fantastic.
But to see the number of players who came in after that, it was a pretty big spike, and a lot of them stayed around, of course, to continue playing, you know, this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is real. That was a lot of players coming in and giving us feedback and playing the game and enjoying the product that we got. Also, you saw a lot of other players coming in and going, I hadn't played this since launch. Holy cow.
It's so different.
I'm going to get my friends to come in and play, and they can bring their friends to come in and play. And then, you know, and then unsolicited, we had other, you know, people re-review the game. You know, and they're like, hey, we were going to re-review this. And it's like, well, thank you for that. We're okay, but we appreciate you doing that. That's a good recognition of the work that the team has put in and the efforts people have put in to try to make this just the most amazing, you know, live Fallout game, you know, that we can present. So
for sure.
So, yeah.
It honestly, we are going doing a bit of a full circle moment and seeing how far Fallout 76 has come. The thing that was really that moment where I think a lot of people realize the game has very much vastly improved since launch is especially on Steam, when all those reviews ticked over to the positive, and you've built such a hardcore audience. Does it still surprise you to this day? You created this game in a harsh, desolate wasteland. There was a PvP system, and then everyone was like, oh, we just want to be friends with each other and share items. And oh, you're walking out of the vault, here's a paper bag full of 200 stim packs. Did that take you off guard a little bit, that the community is the way it is still this day?
Absolutely. I would have never guessed that the most coveted item in our game would be a clean toilet.
It's true.
And that if given the chance, people in the wasteland would not want to murder one another. Actually,
no.
It kind of sheds a bit of hope for humanity in real life.
It does.
It's encouraging to see, and it's fun. And you know, how our community reacts to our game and how they want to play our game very much shapes our content that we make, right? It just does. We want to encourage them to hop in the world each day. We want to give them a world that they want to hop into. So, yeah,
sure.
Very surprising.
You know, going back to when you were talking about things we were excited about, even with the ghoul, but the game in general, I think the one thing that is probably not overlooked, but I want to say it out loud anyway, is I'm excited for how many videos are going to be simply role-playing of ghouls. and going into the world and seeing people doing their role playing inside of our game. Like we've really given them a new thing to role play with. And yeah. I'm really excited to see that. I think it's going to be really eye opening. You know, in terms of the numbers of players who are going to come in and just simply role play and run around the world with their friends and create videos and, you know, have trials. And it's like you're going to do all this stuff in the game. And I'm really excited to see it. I think that says a lot about the feature itself and how excited players are to engage with it.
You know, what was kind of funny when the show came out, seeing people go into our character create and do all these like kind of extreme settings on their human character to try to make it look like Ghoul. And some of them got pretty close. And I remember seeing that thinking we made the right decision, because going back to, you know, simply being an appearance change, a lot of people would be happy with that. Look, I can role play as a ghoul now because I look like one. But then of course there would be people that would want that mechanical difference too. So that's really why we wanted to wait and do it the way that we did.
Absolutely. And look, Ghoul Within, Ghoul Update, being able to play as a ghoul, it's coming out on March 18. I would love to give you kind of the ending segment of this podcast to make your pitch to players that are invested in the game, that are about to play as a ghoul and maybe didn't try out the PTS, to players that haven't played 76 in a while, maybe looking to jump back in, and to players that have never played 76. Like, why should people be playing the Ghoul Within update come March 18?
So there's never been a better time to adventure with friends in the wasteland. I mean, I always say that, and I always mean it. The game keeps getting better and better. So if you want to hop in to the Fallout universe and make some great friends along the way and have some great experiences, now's the best time to do it. And it just happens to be when we're making it so that you can play as a ghoul for the first time in any Fallout game ever.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. What about you, Bill?
Yeah, same as what John said, but I also like to throw numbers out there too and just say, look, this is update 58 that's coming up.
God.
Right. And that just puts it in perspective. Mary. You know, we talk about 21 major updates, but really it is 58 updates, you know, to the product. And I think that says a lot about, again, the support, but also the support, you know, not only internally, but support from our fans and also our internal team and just the engagement that they have. And so, and we've talked about, you know, all the way at the end of the year, you know, that'll be 64 and then 70. You know, it's like we don't have an end in sight for this. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep putting out content. We're going to keep doing all the things we've been doing before with QOL and systemic changes. And now is a great time for, especially if you're a new player, to come in. This is, you know, there's 6 years of content, you know, built up in here, and you're going to find friends along the way. You know, we mentioned the whole, you know, what was your favorite moments? I wanted to also call out that, like, when I first started working on this game, I went onto Twitch and I was just looking at who was streaming this game. You know, what kind of things were they doing? What kind of communities did they have? And I ended up becoming friends with some really good content creators. And I never let them know like what I did or who I was or anything. I just played with them and join on every night and jump into the game and play and run around and pictures in the camps and stuff like that. And they are still friends, you know, to this day. We're on Discord. We're playing. Some of them still don't know what I do, and some do. And you know, but it's great because we're all friends, despite even them knowing like what I do for this game. You know, they love the game. They love playing it, and they love certainly hanging out with us when we play. And so those friendships we've made along the way, and I don't think I'm the only one who's made friendships in this game along the way. You know, those are really impactful, especially because this is a game that really flourished, you know, during the COVID times when people were home and needed some social outlets to play with players and play with other friends and still keep up those social connections. And so it was really pivotal for them and made a lot of really big impacts on players. And to this day, I will always remember that time frame of just seeing how much that community has grown and all the players who see new players coming into the game, and they'll build a camp right out in front of the vault that says, "Welcome new players." You know, it's like you see stuff like that and you can't help but get excited to come in and work on this game every day. So yeah, my final parting notes there on what we do.
Thank you for sharing that. And honestly, to both of you, Bill, John, I really appreciate you joining the podcast. Like to have you being on here talking about Fallout 76, I would love to get you back on at a future time to talk about the next big update. Honestly, I've really very much enjoyed this, and I hope you both have too.
Same. So absolutely. Love it.
Yeah, oh, thank you so much for having us. It's been great.
No, of course. Of course. Again, the door is always is open for you both to come on and talk about Fallout 76. I'm very much invested back in the game. Ghoul update, Ghoul Within, coming March 18. Do check it out. Again, thank you, Bill and John, for joining us on Lone Vault Radio. And until next time, this has been the Lone Vault Wanderer. Please take care of yourselves, and would you kindly keep fighting the good fight.